and welcome to another episode of Not About the Weather. This is just one part of our 2016 in review episode, so you're getting sort of a giant-sized episode this time around with everybody weighing in, which is pretty exciting. But it's been a while. It's been a long while. We were just talking about how we kind of forgot how to do this, so this seems a little awkward, like the first just episode again. Yeah. That's why. It would also help if I had my microphone facing me instead of the wall next to me.
So when we take a break, we forget how microphones work and also how to speak. This is Welcome to the wonderful world of podcasting.
Yes.
And we're your fabulous three. We need a better name than that, but we're the fabulous three that always comes together.
That's true. We're almost like a group within a group at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we mesh very well together, and also our schedules just seem to line up, which is interesting.
Yeah.
We're just talking about like Mortal Kombat and Star Wars and Pokemon and more Mortal Kombat.
That's how it should be.
Just wait until we get onto Tremors.
Yes. Oh my God. Don't get me started. Okay. Well, anyway, we should probably introduce ourselves because that's also a thing. I'm Karen, and today I'm also joined by, as usual, Danya and Mitch.
What up? Happy New Year.
I'm the man. She's the British, so I guess you can't mess us up.
She's the British.
You would hope.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Though, that said, apparently people have mistaken me for Natalie before, but, like, I don't... people have mistaken our accents for each other.
In Australia, they're nowhere near.
Yeah.
It was funny the number of times when I was with Nat in New York City that people would be like, oh, where are you from? England?
No.
Like, she gets that all the time.
It drives me, like, crazy because it's very obviously an Australian accent that she has. Yeah. Like...
We've talked before about how her accent is not as strong as other people's, but still very Australian to me.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely, definitely.
I love Natalie's accent because it's like the perfect mix for like her sarcasm and her wit. The way she says things, it just works. It's an amazing. I just don't see how anyone could ever think, yeah, that's a British accent.
Are you saying we're not sarcastic or witty?
Wow. No, I'm talking intonation. That was a different, like, comma.
Wow. No.
Don't understand how...
Mitch, I don't think we're friends anymore.
No, the British is very sarcastic. See, right then and there.
That was sarcasm, in case you missed it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, God. Well, first off, contact info. Let's just get this out of the way. If you would like to get in contact with us, please hit us up at NETW Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. That's also our Gmail account. You can find us on notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, which you can also follow as a Tumblr account. And it all kind of groups in there with Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, which is obviously where this kind of evolved from. And yeah, please send us some feedback, and hopefully with the new year, we'll be getting back on track and getting some more episodes out. But I want to ask you guys how you were, because, well, I know, Danya, you're kind of buried in snow right now, which is a bit unusual.
Yeah, it's incredibly unusual. So this actually is about the weather, so...
Sorry? Is that allowed? Are we allowed to talk about the weather or not about the weather?
It depends.
I'm a rebel. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I think I'm ready for it. This is the first weather that I remember us talking about in depth.
Let's talk about the weather or not about the weather. it started snowing today. In fact, it's snowing across most of the UK. And as anyone who has seen news coverage of snow in the UK will know, we are completely ill-equipped to deal with any...
Really?
Little tiny bit of snow. Yeah, we have no infrastructure built in for it.
But doesn't it snow pretty often?
No. So because
it doesn't...
Is that
just a misnomer?
Because it doesn't, like, we've... There's, like, no salt on the roads, so the roads have, like... Because it was raining right up until it like turned and started snowing, there were like the roads have all been waterlogged. So what has happened is when it's gotten cold enough for the snow to start sticking, it started turning into like slush. So also because there's like no snow plows, there's no clearing of the roads, there's no salt on the roads, there's nothing. So you're driving and walking through about, at the moment where I am, it's about 1.5 to 2 inches of just slush. And you can imagine trying to drive on that, there's like no friction at all. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Usually I get excited when it snows because it doesn't happen very often, but walking from the car park where I live into the house, I had to kind of like trudge through this like ridiculous slush, and it soaked through my shoes and into my socks.
That is so sad.
Really horrible squelchy noises, and my feet are now like really cold.
You know, like SpongeBob feet. You know like, that sound?
Yeah, it's like really, you know that miserable squishy squelchy noise when like you've got water in your shoes, and just I was like really sad.
Yeah, I feel like the weather in London seems to be pretty close to what I've experienced in Seattle, because they also are very
ill equipped. I was going to ask you about that. Are you where all that snow is falling?
No. That's like in the mountain range, but essentially Seattle barely gets any, but when it doesn't know what to do with it just the same. And people get really like knocked off from the fact that there's like 1 inch and they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, okay, really?
That's
like, I know that there,
but then,
cause there are hills here. I get that much, but it's not to the point where like it melts too quick cause it rains over it and it's gone. So there's never really like a long, you know, standing snowfall or something.
Yeah, the problem is with places like that is because it doesn't happen very often, there's no point putting the investment or infrastructure in place in order to deal with it, because it's a lot of resources and time and money for something that may be used maybe once in like every couple of years. So for us, we have like nothing built in place. I would imagine it's the same for places like Seattle. So when it does happen, like an inch of snow can actually be really, really dangerous. In fact, more dangerous than a large amount of snow in places like Chicago, for example. Because
I'm just jaded because like I'm from New York and I lived in Denver and that's where I'm going to. So I'm just like, whatever, because we get like 5 feet snowstorms and I'm like, let's go out in the SUV. I got this. Sometimes I've gone out in sedans and that snow.
Cars.
No problem.
I would imagine you've got what? Snow plows that clear the roads?
So that's the thing, because like, no, not always. I've been through like Vail, you know, like the famous skiing place in Colorado, in a sedan in the middle of a snowstorm. There were already like, I'm going to call it like 2 feet of snow on the ground. We just packed down ice at that point from other cars.
Yeah.
And I'm just trekking up this mountain. I'm a very brave person when it comes to the weather, as we're not talking about the weather. I actually kind of get excited because I'm like, this is a fun challenge. So I try and hold sympathy for people who get excited about the inch. I really do.
But
I've
been to these places.
But it's not in my wheelhouse to get excited about such a thing. I'm ready for like the big 5 foot storms. Those are the ones that get really exciting for me.
I think Danya and I, our minds just went to a place simultaneously.
I felt that when it went there. Yeah,
I'm sure that you did feel that when it went there. When got excited about the inch.
Oh no, perhaps I did feel it when it went there.
Oh my God, we are awful. I love it.
Welcome back to Not About the Weather.
Yes, with Danya, Mitch, and Karen.
It necessarily went
to
Not
like
About
the
Weather, didn't it?
The nighttime show. Like, you know how they have hype after dark? We should be Not About the Weather after dark.
Yeah.
Yes, we're like the after dark version of not talking about the weather while we're talking about the weather. That's
getting
perfect.
Excited about inches.
Are we talking about the weather or are we making dick jokes?
The world may never know.
That's the question. But why I asked you, Mitch, is because Portland got all that snow and I couldn't remember. Like, I knew you were over there somewhere.
Yeah, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. We didn't really see too much of that. I think that there was like a little dusting, but I don't know what it is about Portland. They seem to have gotten a lot more snow this season than Seattle did. And it's even been a colder winter in Seattle than is normal, apparently. But I feel like I hear that around the world. So I don't know if they can ever trust that.
Well, it's been raining here for like 3 days. I'm in Ohio, so basically our weather, like I also grew up in New York, and Ohio basically gets the weather like 3 days before we do, so very similar climate. And the fact that it's been raining for 3 days in January is like, what is going on? I was talking to Danya and a couple other people earlier. I was like, we're probably going to get another polar vortex in like May, and then we're just going to be screwed. It's going to be like 10 feet of
I love
snow
the
in
sound of
May.
that polar vortex. That's amazing.
Have you not heard
It
of
sounds like a
that?
Mortal Kombat finishing move from that like guy.
Finish him, polar
Polar
vortex.
vortex. Kamehameha. Oh wait.
Wow. I think we should just jump right into the episode at this point because, it's not going to get any better. Okay, let's start off with our gripes. So basically this episode is the ultimate 2016 episode discussion about our obsessions to share and grievances to air. And this is kind of like the biggest things we loved and hated in 2016. And it was kind of difficult to choose, I'm not gonna lie. And we kind of decided to avoid talking about deaths because honestly, like all of the celebrities and stuff that died, some of them hit some of us quite hard, been fans of those people for a very long time, and it's not great, and we kind of want to avoid diving into that further. But if you guys do want to say something about it, like please feel free. I'm not going to tell you no or anything, but we're going to try to keep it a little less heavy because it can get a little bit heavy sometimes when you're talking about some of the people that passed away this year, last year.
Probably
Sound
for the
good?
best.
Yeah.
No, yeah,
Yeah.
it is.
I mean, some of them are still like I'm still a little messed up about a
Yeah.
couple of them, so I don't think I'm in the right place to talk about some of it, so I would rather, yeah, put the focus on something else.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I'm gonna try to do this in order that kind of flows a little bit. So let's first, I'm gonna throw it to you, Mitch, first. Let's talk about your gripe for 2016.
My gripe is Apple. Apple has been a company that has alienated a lot of its fan base, including me. And that definitely started, in my opinion, with the removal of the headphone jack and the new iPhone. And that really set a bad tone because it started to feel like Apple didn't care. This is Tim Cook now, and he's not going to be any kind of Steve Jobs that you hoped he was. And it's sad. It's starting to make me feel like, why do I own an iPhone? I don't feel like this thing's going to be compatible or even working within the year because they'll, create issues with it. The software won't work, it won't update correctly, or just something. Like it's really not feeling like a comfortable company to be with. And I'm happy I'm on here with Danya because I know you're always more informed about Apple than I, given your work. So what
Well,
more can you
former
say
work.
about this? Yeah, former work. What can you say more about like this, headphone jack removal and your opinion on it if you do have one?
Honestly, I mean, with Apple, they've tended to do what is like forward thinking, or what they believe is forward thinking. And I think in some respects, they have done it in the right ways previously. So, for example, when the MacBook Pro range, they removed the DVD CD drive on them because they moved to an App Store format for their Macs, as well as the one that the people were familiar with on the phone on the phones. So, I feel like in certain ways, their innovations have made a lot of sense in respect to changing markets and how they kind of interact with software or, technology in general. What is really frustrating about the removal of the headphone jack is that Bluetooth and wireless headsets are not the norm across a lot of people because they're very exclusive a lot of the time because they tend to be a technology that is a lot more expensive. And yes, I know Apple's products are expensive in general, but in fact, when you look at something like the headphone jack, people will have certain kinds of headphones that they're comfortable with, that they wear, particularly in terms of not just comfort, but brands that they're comfortable with or sound quality. And there's a lot of loyalty between like audiophiles in respect to like the headphones that they use. But not only that, there's probably a lot of accessibility reasons for why people use the headphones that they use. For some people, using a wireless headset, for example, may not be feasible because the kind of headphones that will work with their way of life may only be wired. So then what you have is this whole set of adapters that you now need to use in order to be able to use the headphones that you want to. So for example, I've got a really nice set of in-ear headphones that my dad bought for me two Christmases ago. And they're great, they're fantastic, but they are not wireless. So I have to have the ability to plug them in. So what they're doing here is that they're trying to innovate based on where they believe the market trend is leading, which is for everything to go wireless. But in certain respects, there are reasons why things like headphones may not be wireless completely yet. And so I think it's very, very telling that they haven't thought through all of the different walks of life and people that could be using headphones to just innovate for innovation's sake rather than it being a necessary step forward. So it's really frustrating. Oh, yeah.
And I think that you're saying a lot of the things that I wasn't able to formulate because you're really good at that in general, especially with Apple things. That's why I was like, yes, Danya's here. She can help me sound more intelligent because she'll, I'll just agree with everything. I concur. I also think that, yay. I also think a big issue is that Apple has not yet released its, is it called EarPod, not yeah. AirBud? It's not AirBud like the dog, which I wish it was. But I'm still going to call them earbuds in my mind.
Little golden retrievers stuck to your ears.
Yes.
You know, so might be slightly more on board with it if more dogs were involved. So.
I think everyone would be. The issue is those things aren't out as far as I understand, right? Like, they're still in development or whatever.
They just come out. I think they came out roughly around Christmas time.
Did they? Because I was sitting there kind of waiting for just for like more shit to hit the fan about like how horrible they are. And I love the memes about people saying like, great, now I have more pieces of my life to lose and all that. It's just, it's amazing. It does make me laugh a lot. It's kind of like back to our Nintendo Switch conversation where I was like, great, a controller that falls apart into pieces, I can just lose all those. Yes. That's a big issue because I don't know how you keep those little tiny little earbuds together. Like, what do you, in general with Bluetooth, I've seen better Bluetooth ones that have a wire that connect the two. That's probably the best option there. And also my other major issue is that Apple didn't just release this EarPod. It also took out the capability of normal headphone jack, thus also eliminating aux. That's probably a big issue for a lot of people with certain cars that don't have Bluetooth or the like. Yeah, that was a big kicker for me because I was like, that's kind of a newer thing too, that cars would even have Bluetooth, in my opinion. Like, I feel like that's a 2012 and newer car, and that's not, I mean, not a lot of people own a newer car.
I'm very fortunate in that I own a newer car through a very incredible series of circumstances that worked out in a timely way. So I'm very, very lucky in that I do actually have Bluetooth in my car, so I can connect my phone wirelessly to my car. But if I didn't have that, it does also have an aux feature. But what this means now is that I also have a charger in my car that I plug to make sure that my phone doesn't run out of battery while I'm completely rinsing it by playing music constantly, because that's how I work with my phone, so it has to be plugged in. But if I wanted to use the aux, then I need another adapter. And so And here's the thing. So I looked up to make sure that they had come out. Yes, the AirPods or the AirBuds, if we want to call them that, are out. And a lot of it is talking about, like, wireless headphone sales soar after Apple dropped headphone jack. And Apple's AirPods are dominating wireless headphone sales. Well, yeah. And the reason why is that Apple has created an environment with its brand in which everyone has been so reliant on their technology for so long. They've bought apps, they have bought music through iTunes, shows, movies, podcasts, everything like that. And they're doing it all through Apple devices. It's non-transferable. So you think about not only the actual phones that you purchase from them and how much they are, but the actual software and product that you purchase through your phones. The amount of money that you have probably invested into your iPhone is fairly significant, and it's not easy to be able to transfer those purchases between an Apple phone and an Android or a Windows phone. Or
oh, dear God. It's not even easy to transfer those between two different iPhones.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous to... I mean, Apple Music is a whole other discussion on why Apple has been the worst as of late. So even just 2016, yeah. Apple Music is such a hot mess. The fact that it deleted everyone's music, if you wanted Apple Music, it deleted whatever music wasn't found in the Apple Store or the iTunes mm-hmm. Store. I find that preposterous because that's such a very fancy word to use for this, but I think I don't have like a stronger word to use there, because that's just that's mind-blowing. Like,
it is.
What if, like, for instance, I had like concert recordings on my iTunes, I believe, or my iPhone, that were of when I was, I think, like playing in an orchestra at one point, and now those are gone because that was just, I was like, I don't need the CD, it's on digitally. Well, that was probably my mistake, but still, like, there are a lot of instances, I feel like, that a lot of people have, like, taken live recordings of artists they liked a lot, or anything, like, it just, that blows my mind, that they were like, that's going to be a thing, and people are going to accept that. That makes no sense.
No, it doesn't, and I guess they've set up the market in their favor, because now that they've removed the headphone jack as well, of course wireless sales are up of headphones, because it's a necessity. If people don't want to lose the investment that they've put into their phones, be it through an Apple Music subscription or iTunes purchases or App Store purchases or anything to do with what they have purchased on their phone, not just the devices themselves, then yeah, buying a pair of wireless headphones is a necessity if they have ended up with that phone and they don't want to lose out on a significant financial investment that they've made in it. And the ones that obviously are going to work the best with the technology, or you would assume because they've been designed alongside them, are like the AirPods. So of course we're going to see a rise in sales of wireless headphones and the AirPods themselves, because Apple have created an environment where people are reliant on that technology and have invested so much into it that they have no other choice.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that I actually really didn't mind what Apple did, which, like, I feel like I'm walking to the lion's den here. But I love the iPhone. I recognize that Android in general is better because you can do a lot more with it, but I've always felt that the iPhone is a lot more user-friendly, and, you know, maybe that means that it's simpler and my brain just can't wrap its head around Android, but I've always been a big fan of the iPhone and of Apple, and yes, you're going to need some adapters for the removal of the headphone jack, and it is going to cause some problems, but there are ways to work around it, and the people who are like, this ruins everything, no, it doesn't ruin everything. Like, yes, you might have to go find another way to plug into your car. They make things that they have, like, Bluetooth devices that you can plug into your cigarette lighter in your car.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, there's always technology to help you adapt to the changes. Do you have to buy it because of that? Yes, which is obviously unfortunate. But I do know that Apple is also including some of those adapters for like the lightning cord to the headphone jack for new users and stuff who don't necessarily want to go out and get the AirBuds. But what I like about this is that Apple, and this isn't always a good thing, but Apple doesn't necessarily wait until the market needs something in order to develop it. They are the definition of innovation, and they do push the boundaries sometimes, and people like to push back, but you know what? We're all going to get used to it. When iOS 10 came out and I switched over to it, I was like, oh my God, this is so different. Like, now you have to push down the home button to unlock your phone.
I'm still not over that one.
Yeah, like it still feels a little bit different. But you know what? I've already forgotten how like it used to be before that in a lot of cases. The differences, I've already assimilated to them. And it's going to continue to happen because this just is the way it is. And like, it's a little, you know, Big Brother 1984, like dystopian-esque, but technology continues to advance and we're going to continue to adapt to it. So I try not to worry too much about all of these changes and just kind of go with the flow.
Yeah, my concern is mostly that for me to be able to use the iPhone 7, I not only would have to have the adapter to use a headphone, the headphone jack, so lightning to headphone, I would then have to have an adapter for a splitter to be able to charge and listen at the same time, would also potentially have to have a different adapter to be able to use in my car. And then you think, well, then what do you do? Do you invest in new headphones and then forget about the ones that you've already got? Or so for me, it's like I look at the potential of having to upgrade. And now I'm looking at it in the respect of what is my investment going to look like now? Because I feel like if I do switch to the iPhone 7 and I have to change a lot of my other technology with it and replace it, then what's going to happen next time I have to upgrade? I don't have to just change my phone. I have to change a lot of the peripherals that go with it. And as someone who doesn't get locked into contracts because I travel so much, therefore I need the freedom to be able to use my phone abroad without significant cost, I then am stuck with the idea of having to buy a phone outright, which is a good couple of £100 at best, up to about £500 to £600 at most for the variation of iPhone that I use. But then if I was to do that, it's not just £500 to £600 for the phone, it's then another £159 for these headphones if I wanted to use the ones that are guaranteed to work the best with the phone. Then adapters potentially as well for if I needed to use something else with it, and so on and so forth. So now I'm looking at an outlay of like almost £200 to £300 more than I would have if I was just changing my phone. And I think that's where the crux lies, is that instead of now being attainable technology for all walks of life, they are now pushing themselves out of the reach of so many people, and therefore any innovation that they may be making is not going to reach as many people.
And just to wrap up this discussion on why Apple has been my biggest gripe of 2016, I wanted to mention that when we're talking of adapters, as far as I understand it, the new MacBook does not have a USB port, which blows my mind as well. Because that's a very common thing. I get that USB 2 is a thing. I'm not sure what it comes with. Donya, I'm going to rely on you for that one.
To be honest, I didn't even bother looking at the new MacBook Pros. The second I saw the touch bar thing, I was just like...
Yeah, me too.
I was just like, no, okay, I'm done. So I missed out.
I've seen some interesting things on that touch bar. Like, for some reason, someone decided to play the original Doom on that, like, emulate it on the touch bar itself. Weird. Like, I don't get what else it could be used for. But
emojis, apparently.
Oh God. So yeah, it's a tough sell to try and understand why Apple is my company anymore. I don't think it is. That's the thing. I think I'm slowly going more toward Google, and that in turn runs with Android, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay to check out this Google Pixel when I'm next looking to buy a phone. Hopefully this iPhone lasts. I have the iPhone 6S Plus, so that's a big old honking guy, and I hope that lasts for a while. If it doesn't, I just won't be back to Apple. There's no reason to. They already lost my Apple Music. That was a big important part of me staying on Apple, and they have definitely lost me in terms of headphone jacks and now USBs on their computers, along with CD drives, I guess. I don't know. Like, that's a tough thing, but I feel like that's still somewhat important to my life every once in a while that it matters enough. So I'm to the point where I'm like, okay, adapters are done. I need to go with what technology still works with me, even if that means that I'm buying something that's, quote, not innovative or anything like that. Because my major issue, to sum up all of what we're saying, is that while Apple has been a main innovator in terms of new technologies, I think that they're taking a different step in taking out the headphone jack, because this isn't just starting with a new technology. This is also completely eradicating an old type of technology that they're very much behind, that they had in every type of their device before, and now that's gone. And that headphone jack being gone says a lot to me about where this company wants to go and who it wants to have in its very exclusive club.
And this isn't to say that I don't love my iPhone. Like, I still love my iPhone to bits. I do. And I use Apple technology throughout my entire home. So it's just frustrating because then I look at it and I kind of see the trajectory they're moving on and I'm like, I don't know how much longer I can continue to afford to buy Apple technology. And
And it's
I
just so much more
use
expensive than the competitors just for a brand a lot of the time. A lot of times, even we're losing functionality for that brand too. And the fact that, as Karen's saying, in Android devices, you can modify and edit and add on any kind of app that you want. And that's really attractive.
Yeah, good points all around, but first world problem solved.
I know, right?
Oh, this is the biggest first world problem to ever first world problem.
Well, okay, let's jump into something else. I want to go into mine because Danya's, yours is going to lead into the next section afterwards.
Yes,
So,
absolutely.
my biggest gripe of 2016, which I'm going to apologize for now, is Rogue One. I did not like Rogue One at all. I'm going to preference this by saying that I was really looking forward to Rogue One. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan, don't particularly enjoy the original movies or the prequels, but absolutely fell in love with Force Awakens. Completely obsessed with that movie. Have watched it dozens of times and thought, okay, I get Star Wars now. I get why people love this universe. There's so many stories to tell. When Rogue One came out, when the trailers first started appearing, I was like, yes, I am on board with this. Jin looks like a total badass. This is what I want from Star Wars, and I'm getting it. This is so exciting. Well, went and saw Star Wars, midnight showing, the whole thing. And walked out of that movie extremely disappointed. Now, I think part of that is on me because it relies on knowledge of previous movies, which I have very limited knowledge of. I don't remember a lot of details. So the people that came back, the people that were sort of like in the originals and played roles, I didn't really understand those references, which doesn't necessarily ruin a movie, but definitely helps enhance your viewing of the movie. And I found that I didn't particularly like Jin. I thought that she was sort of a weak character. And coming off of Rey, like, that was really disappointing. And like Mitch was saying earlier about the whole Apple thing, I'm really glad Danya's on this episode because she is my go-to Star Wars person. And I felt bad. Like, I don't feel guilty about not liking the movie because that's just my opinion, and I recognize objectively, like, it's a solid movie and people really enjoyed what it brought to the table. But that being said, I don't think that it speaks to all manner of Star Wars fans. I think that this one is a little bit more geared towards the longtime fans. And Danya, I know that you guys talked extensively about Rogue One on Resistance Radio, which is another podcast you can find on Hypeable. But I didn't get a chance to go on there, but if I had, I probably would have, you know, been saying the same things I am now, which is that, like, I'm disappointed that I was disappointed in Rogue One, because I had really high hopes for it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to Rogue One, it's very particular in where it needs to fit in the universe. So it did tread new ground in respect to, like, the story that it was telling, because it's always very much been about the Skywalker story and the Skywalkers being very central to that tale. So in certain respects, it tread new ground, particularly with looking at another side of the Rebellion and the Rebel Alliance and the Shades of Grey within it, and what they're, I guess, willing to do in the name of freedom, but almost edging on the line of, like, domestic terrorism to an extent, because the force that they're still working against is the government, pretty much, or, like, a, like, variation of the government off the Senate. So it did in some ways do something completely new, but it also required that you had quite significant knowledge about Revenge of the Sith and also A New Hope, and that's understandable, because where it fell was between those two movies. So you needed to understand the fall of the Republic and everything that led into the rise of the Empire, and why there is a Rebel Alliance or the beginnings of a Rebel Alliance in the first place, and what the
Senate. I mean, shouldn't we just, like, look up Spark Notes for Revenge of the Sith, though? Save everyone the pain of suffering through Anakin's performance and just everything of that movie.
Spark Notes? I don't know. Whatever. We don't really use that here, so I know what it is. But anyway, yes, you could, for Revenge of the Sith, but then, like, things like Mustafar, the planet that Darth Vader mm-hmm. was on in the scene that he gets in Rogue One, is from Revenge of the Sith. That's where he had his final battle with Obi-Wan. And then
I didn't put that together for some reason until you just mentioned that, so I guess that could have been important.
Yeah, that's the planet.
Well, that's, like, nostalgia factor in a way. That's not even, like, importance. But I get that that was also part of what Karen's saying. The enjoyment wasn't there for her all the way.
Yeah.
She didn't have the nostalgia factor with all of these bits.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of what happened in Rogue One impacts significantly on the way that you then read A New Hope, because it changes certain things. For example, the scene on the Death Star where Tarkin and Vader are talking to the rest of, like, the sort of higher, I guess, like, the generals and the officers that work on the Death Star, about everything that's happening and the dissolvement of the Senate, and you notice that there are empty chairs at the table. Well, obviously there are, because Krennic died in Rogue One, and then that you've got, like, the exhaust port in the Death Star, and which is obviously the flaw that they're able to exploit in order to destroy it in A New Hope, was a purposeful design flaw put in place by Galen Erso in...
Well, Karen, I want to ask you then, too, within Danya's point, I didn't mean to interrupt you, John, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Within Danya's point of the flaw, did you appreciate from... You're saying you love The Force Awakens, how in that movie Han Solo goes... There'll be a way in. There's always a way in. Like, that felt so cheesy to me in Force Awakens until they went back and kind of, not retconned, but, like, fixed that in Rogue One in a way that I love. Did you appreciate Force Awakens anymore from Rogue One?
No, they feel like such separate entities to me. In a way that I think they are. It is such a new story, and they obviously bring in older elements, especially when Han Solo shows up, and of course Luke at the end, but, like, I think the reason why I liked Force Awakens so much was that it is essentially a reboot of a franchise that I don't love. I enjoy it. I understand why people enjoy Star Wars. I'm never going to shame anyone for loving Star Wars, especially because I'd probably die if I did that. But Force Awakens opened a new door into this universe that I could finally understand. I could finally connect to this story. And Rogue One, there was such a disconnect there for me. I liked some of the characters a lot. I liked some of the moments. I still enjoyed the film as a film, but in terms of it making me, it actually made me take a step backwards in terms of my love of Star Wars as a whole, because now I'm like, well, wait, was Force Awakens just a fluke? Is it the fact that it's, you know, I'm saying a modern story in that it takes place after the other stories, whereas Rogue One goes back in time in a way.
Did you also from Force Awakens, like Leia's importance in this resistance, and especially like that scramble that they had at the end? Oh, am I spoiling things? Is that okay, guys? I don't know.
I was going to try to avoid spoilers.
What do you think, Karen?
I was going to avoid spoilers because, you know, some people get testy about that.
Well, there's just a scramble, is what I'll say. Yeah. There's an exciting bit in the end that I think really shows the importance of what goes on in the entirety of the series. That once again, Karen, to me, made me appreciate Force Awakens. And that's why I'm asking you again, because I also liked Force Awakens. And I think Rogue One, as you're saying, seems disconnected from it, really connected very well for me in a way that I find astounding from the perspective that Disney was able to tie together two very far away movies, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, I suppose, even. But they brought them together in a way that I thought was beautiful and definitely is ushering in this new era of Star Wars in a way that's cohesive and entertaining and exciting. And as you're saying, Karen, that it's not understandable. I feel like even with my limited knowledge that I have of the original trilogy, that I was appreciating this and that it was like almost informing me. It was telling me the behind the scenes stuff that I didn't get. It told me the reasons that I didn't understand like 4, 5, and 6 as much. They were all within this movie for me. They explained that away without, I can't give away those spoilers, but those movies now make more sense because of Rogue One. So maybe if you watched the 4, 5, and 6 now, you might appreciate them more because of Rogue One, because I do think they explain a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that is really important. And that I think honestly should have been included in the originals, but maybe that's probably my own separate gripe about the Star Wars series.
That's actually something that I am going to do because, like I said, like there's a reason why this is my biggest gripe of 2016, because I was so disappointed that I was disappointed in this movie. Like, it really bothers me that I didn't enjoy it because I had such high hopes for it and because I was so excited following The Force Awakens that, like, yes, Star Wars, I finally get the hype about Star Wars, and then now I feel like I'm back to where I was before Force Awakens, where I was like, guys, I'm trying, but I don't get it. But because Danya is an awesome lady, she said that she will watch the movies with me, and any questions that I have, I can ask her, and she can kind of help me, because Star Wars, the universe is so expansive. There's so much in there, and like, she can rattle off planets and characters, and I'm like, you are speaking another language. I have no idea what you're saying right now. Like, you guys were just talking about things, and I'm like, that sounds like a made up word. I mean, it probably is, but like,
I love that. I wonder if I could do that with Pokemon to the same effect that you do that with Star Wars. Because I was trying to think as we were talking about this, what I know as much as Danya knows Star Wars.
I mean, that's a tall feat. I'm just saying that now. But
yeah, like, I don't think I know anything as well as you know Star Wars. That's amazing. More than a psychopathic. It's like a religion to you. It's amazing. Do study the Force.
Yeah, so for anyone who knows me in real life, you'll know that when people flatter me, I go, like, bright.
Danya level of blushing.
It is Danya level blushing. That's happening right now. You can't see me, but I'm like, I'm probably going to heat the whole room up.
Oh, good. It was cold in there, so you needed some heat.
I did.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of that, like, I'm not giving up on Star Wars. It's something that I like weirdly care about. I think it's because a lot of my friends care about it, and I've seen Natalie, for instance, go from somebody who knows nothing about Star Wars, doesn't really care about it, and then coming to this point where it's like one of her biggest obsessions.
She's kind of like what Twink
Saga she's been doing with Supernatural recently, and like she makes me want to rewatch Supernatural. That's Same. Just kind of like, you know, the gravity that she has about her, but.
That reminds me of like, do you remember when Brooke wrote in saying, how do I keep up with all these series that Natalie keeps wrecking me? That's so true. Yeah. That's for life. She doesn't ever stop that. she gets you like this. She is a lot of the reason that I actually cared about Star Wars coming in too, to Force Awakens. God.
It's all Natalie's fault. But yeah, I want to care. And I'm going to try again. And Danya's going to hold my hand through it. So
that's true.
I'm hoping that I will have a greater appreciation, and maybe I'll rewatch Rogue One, and knowing the ending, which was like a huge disappointment for me, because
really,
I didn't know. And in hindsight, like, that's kind of dumb, but I didn't know. And that was a huge factor for why I didn't like the movie. So I'm thinking after a rewatch of the originals, I'll rewatch Rogue One, and I'll see how I feel about it. Maybe I'll come back and let you guys know.
You know, as a former Star Wars noob, I will say that the most effective way of getting into this series is definitely to do what you're doing with Danya. That's a beautiful thing. I'd give that advice to anyone else listening that wants to know how they can get into Star Wars. Find yourself a Danya. Maybe adopt our Danya. You need to have someone explain, because there's a lot, like, the Trade Federation stuff starts to get real thick real quick. And there's a lot of, like, translated language, so you're just reading a lot of it, and then your brain is switching over to hearing words, and it's like, whoa! Like, there's so much information thrown at you, especially, I think, in 5, I found, that it's so hard to swallow unless you have someone that can pause the movie and explain that, like, 30-second scene to you in the course of probably, like, a half an hour, because it's going to take that explanation to get through, I think, that original trilogy.
For anyone out there, actually, who is finding it very, very difficult to, like, pass the information of, like, Star Wars, there is a podcast out there that's actually really quite interesting. It's called Star Wars Minute. And what they do is they have taken each movie and they do a podcast based on it, like, minute by minute. So they...
Ooh.
They really break it down into very small pieces, and they go really in depth about it, as you can imagine. So yeah, it's actually a really good podcast to do if it's something that you are finding it difficult to get your head around. Then that's actually a pretty good podcast to go in on, because it really, really does break it down into small, really small chunks. And
that's amazing. I love that's like better than chapter by chapter for a book, because I think a movie can contain a lot more in terms of like what characters they're not talking about actually, but they're on screen, or maybe like a quick language that you hear and you're like, oh, now we can go and hear more about that species or that race or whatever it is. That's really cool.
It's obviously going to go on for forever.
So, where are they now? Did they start with 4, or did they start with 1?
They started with 4. Let me see where they're up to.
Because I'd assume they do 4 through 6, 1 through 3, then 7, then Rogue One, right? It seems like that has to be the order, because that's the release.
So
but
they are on Attack of the Clones at the minute.
Okay. Maybe skip a little bit of those.
I don't even know which movie is which. That's how
it's two. It's bad. It's bad, Karen.
I've seen it. I know I've seen it.
Two is the least favorite of many, for very good reason. Oh, God. Yeah. It's going to be a painful time with you guys getting through 1 through 3. I want to see, like, tweets, like Karen saying, but it still doesn't make sense when she explained it to me.
Hopefully that won't be the case.
Why is he so angsty? I don't get it.
That podcast does sound really interesting, though. So maybe that will also be in my future. But that seems really intense for me now.
It's really intense. So don't go in on Star Wars Minute unless you've already got some investment in it, because it's very, very, very hardcore, very in-depth. because obviously they're breaking it down into sections of like a minute per film, and the episodes run between like about 20 to 30 minutes roughly. So they're not long episodes, but again, you have to have some semblance of investment in wanting to know about that stuff in order to be able to enjoy it. Otherwise, it just feels like a chore. So it's great. It's very, very interesting. And it's a really cool way to experience the Star Wars universe. And the hosts are, like, they're great. But obviously, you need to want to know about that stuff to enjoy it. Otherwise, it's just a chore. And I would...
It is like studying a new language, Karen. You're very right. Because the mythology is so deep in the Star Wars universe. Because our universe-i, is it the plural?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, so for me, there was a lot of stuff about Rogue One, like the role that Chirrut and Baze played in respect to what they were guardians of. That's very important, based off like some other stuff. And I also read Catalyst, which is one of the books that takes place pre Rogue One, that explained a lot about Krennic and Galen Erso's relationship, and why at the start of the movie you see, this isn't really a spoiler, but Krennic is searching for Galen Erso, who is Jin's father, and you find out more about the why that's there. So there's like expanded content that lends itself quite a lot to it, and I feel like I had a much larger appreciation of Rogue One and some of the characters because I'd read Catalyst before going in, which shouldn't be necessary, I feel, for a movie, but it did really help with it, especially with Krennic as one of the villains, even though I've spoken at length about how I feel about the villains of Rogue One on Resistance Radio, in that I have very, very specific thoughts about it and why it worked for me. But yeah, so there's a lot to take in with Star Wars. And so,
and I'm sure you have defense too, Danya.
Yeah, I'll be there for you, Karen.
I'm sure you had defense too on Jin being a strong character, as opposed to Karen saying that she's weak, Danya. For myself, I kind of just see her as, what's the term in like English when we were learning in like high school? There was a character that just moves along the plot, like a static character, essentially, I think, right? Like, she's one that I think just, she's there to do things, but not to have a personality or to really like have an interest, like a human interest. She doesn't feel too interesting in terms of like her family and her friends and whatever love she may or may not have. That doesn't ever feel like that's ever the forefront. It feels like to me she's really just there to be the rebel, and that's it. And that's where I can see her being very hard to swallow, Karen. Maybe that's what you're saying, that she seemed weak because she didn't have that human interest. What do you mean specifically that you don't feel her as being very strong?
She felt less proactive than I thought she was going to be. I was really looking forward to a soldier, somebody who was almost without emotion, not in a way that's like, you know, a robot, but in a way that's almost like Katniss. And maybe I was making that comparisons to that, you know, famous shot we've all seen 1,000 times with Rogue One, where like she kind of looks like Katniss for a second. And
like the over the shoulder shot with like the lights in the background shaking.
Yeah, yeah. And she ended up being a little more passive, a little whinier almost than I was expecting. And like, I love Rey so much because Rey is such a strong and yet emotionally vulnerable character, and it works so well. And something with Jin just did not work for me. And I think it's because I went in expecting her to be one way and she ended up being completely different, which is not necessarily the fault of, you know, the storytellers. I think she serves her purpose in the movie and it works, but just wasn't what I was expecting.
I think you bring up really fair points. You really do, especially when we're comparing her to Rey. As a casual Star Wars fan, I will easily choose Rey over Jin any day. I think for personality, for warrior qualities, for intelligence, for abilities even. I mean, she has the Force at her beckon and call, and she's a little bit of a deus ex machina in and of herself that way, but I still appreciated her for all the power that she does have. And Jin, I think, is bound to pale in comparison to that. But I think what also we have to look at, Karen, is maybe she's meant to be this way. This is my devil's advocate here, that she could be like maybe a bit of a foil for what we're going to see in the series, because we're going to see the Jedi return and the Force become stronger, and she's just the spark. She's the Katniss in that way too, if you see her as being the spark of this rebellion and the start of everything to get Darth Vader down. And that I think speaks for itself in terms of, like, she's almost like a victim of the times almost. It's not really, I don't think, too much of a character flaw, more of just she has so much to deal with in a big, like, mass of people to get over and to try and figure out who she was aligned with. Like, that character, she had a lot to do, and I think that leaves very little room to be that strong warrior that you and I are looking for, like we were saying we love in Rey. And I'm going to keep my love for Rey separate for just my interest in Jin. I have just an understanding for where she comes from, but I don't think I'm ever going to, like, I'm not going to obsess over her like I do Rey's powers. I'm like, oh, she's so cool. But yeah, Jin just, she falls into just a plain palette for me.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, is what it is at this point. Some people really like Rogue One, and I appreciate that, and I'm looking to also find that love for it. So hopefully, with Donnie's help, it will help me find that. So let's move on to Danya, your gripe for the year, which kind of will segue into my hype for the year, which is very convenient. So please take it away.
Yeah, so my gripe of 2016 is whitewashed out. And I will right off the bat say, I don't mean the movement itself. I mean everything that has necessitated this movement. It is infuriating to me that Hollywood is so set in its ways that there needed to be a mass movement in order to try and put pressure on them regarding it. And also the resistance of people to actually engage in a civilized conversation about it, instead trying to brand people social justice warriors and brush off legitimate concerns that people have with diversity in film, and particularly with taking cultures that are not their own and removing the actual people of those cultures from it, and instead planting a white person in order to make it more palatable for Hollywood. And it's crazy. And people have heard me pretty much through all of last year talking about Doctor Strange and the issues that I feel that it had with some of the choices that it made. And I've still not seen it, for the record, because
it's probably for the best, honestly.
I made that as a conscious decision because I did not want to give Marvel money for a film that I felt that I couldn't support. But the conversation around it has been so important on so many different levels. Not only from, like, the Asian American standpoint, where they're looking at the role of Asia as an exotic backdrop to a lot of these films, where, you know, they're removing the people that are part of those stories and aren't addressing it. And then also, like, the Black community, the Latino community, everything like that, where they are looking at these roles that could so easily involve them, and there is nothing. And I feel like films that do also have more diversity are far more interesting to me, because life isn't white. It's not. It's not just a swathe of white people everywhere. It's not. It's just that simple. There are all sorts of people in the world that deserve their stories to be told, and in very nuanced and different ways. And the fact that people are trying to shut down the conversation and not take it as a legitimate concern because they cast the right person for the role, that is not, at the point of time that we are in currently, a legitimate standpoint that you can take with a lot of films, because they're not casting the right person for the role. They're casting the white person for the role that is going to make them what they perceive is going to make them money, but very obviously doesn't in a lot of cases, because films that have done that, where they have cast white people in the roles of Egyptians, for example, and
What was that? There was Christian Bale, right? He just did a movie like that?
Yeah, there were two. There was Gods of Egypt.
We're into sand action movies again. There are always two of these sand action movies whenever they come out. What is this?
Yeah, there were two. There's Gods of Egypt, and then there was another one as well. But both of them cast white people that they thought were bankable stars, including a director who said, "I can't mount a film on Muhammad so-and-so and expect to make money." And...
Not, which is that not the most disgusting thing you've ever heard?
Absolutely.
That is horrible. Oh my God.
Infuriated about that comment, because...
Do we know the director of the movie so I can boycott for life? Because I need to.
I cannot remember which movie that came from, which director it was, but like, yes, I can find that out for you.
I'm going to look it up because I'm curious.
Yeah, it was like, "I can't mount a movie of this scale on Muhammad so-and-so," and he literally said, "Muhammad so-and-so." It was disgusting. But yeah, like, it's just, it drives me crazy because it doesn't work. Like, saying that doesn't work, because until you have true diversity and equality and representation across movies, you can't honestly say that you're casting the best person for the role, because you haven't afforded the same opportunities to people and given it a level playing field. When it's a level playing field, you can make the argument that you are casting the best person for that role. But until that happens, you can't. So shutting down this conversation and the discussion and everything that goes with it, and people actually getting very, you know, getting their backs up about it, because it's very much being categorized as like white Hollywood that is doing this, and white executives and white people kind of as a mass group endorsing it and allowing it to continue to happen. And that's not to say that they're saying everyone is endorsing it and allowing it to happen, but it is very indicative of those cultures that is what is happening and how it's being enabled to happen. So because people are seeing as a direct attack on them, they're shutting down the conversation and being unwilling to listen to it. Where I think that it is very important to listen, because these are very valid concerns. And if you don't add your voice to it and continue to like shout about it, then nothing is going to get better. Yes, I am a white person. There is no getting around that. That is just who I am. But do I want every single film ever to be about me? No, I don't. I don't find that interesting at all. I want to see the stories of other people. I want to see the stories of everyone. I want people to see themselves on screen and be able to see themselves on screen, and I want to see them as well. And it just, the whole thing drives me crazy. And I've hit the point at the end of 2016 where, do you know what? I don't give a damn what people think anymore in respect to my opinion on this. I legitimately don't care. I'm going to say what I want to say, and that's it. People can deal with it. So,
and you're feisty. I like it.
I think it's so important, like you were saying, to be having these conversations, because not only is it important for directors and the people who cast these films to cast with diversity in mind, it's important for the actors, people of color, to fight for roles that are meaningful and, you know, not necessarily keep casting like the Middle Eastern guy as the terrorist, because that is also a huge issue with the stereotyping and everything like that. I love seeing people of all different cultures stepping into a role that is available to all cultures. I find that very fascinating. You don't need a white man to head up the action movie. You know, his skin color has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, he can punch somebody in the face. So those are the kind of movies I like to watch.
Luke Cage.
So yeah, I think that this is something that not only needs to be discussed behind the scenes, behind the cameras, but, you know, in front of the screen too. Audiences can boycott movies, or they can speak up about the things that they don't like. So it's our job as much as it is their job. And like I said earlier, this kind of flows really well into my hype, because I would just like to point out that Disney is doing a great job right now of increasing its diversity across its films. Have they fixed the problem? No. No, they have not. This is not, you know, a perfect solution, and it's not something that is going to be fixed right away by any means. But I have noticed in particular with Disney that they are really stepping up their game lately, and it's so appreciated. First, they have the A Wrinkle in Time cast, which is incredibly diverse. They've cast people of color and different ethnicities at that, and it's very exciting. We have a whole bunch of articles about it on Hypo, because I've been covering it extensively because I've been so excited about it. The director, Ava, is so cool, and she's done a lot of work to speak up about not only being a person of color who's a director, but also a woman who's a director, and a woman of color who's a director. So, like, that is a very new perspective, and I really like her and what she brings to the table. We've also got, they're looking to cast Kevin Hart as Santa Claus, which it will be hilarious, no doubt. They just announced Anna Kendrick maybe playing Santa Claus for a different
movie. Oh my god, I can't wait.
Which, like, that is awesome. I love Anna Kendrick. And Moana, of course, just came out. And, you know, that was a very cool step in a different direction for Disney, and something that has been a long time coming and is much appreciated. I think that a lot of people, especially a lot of people who share that culture, were very receptive to it. And of course, there's always going to be issues. There's always going to be some things that people don't like, and that's fine, but the effort is there, and I appreciate that a lot. And I hope that Disney, being what it is, such a huge corporation that has such influence over popular culture, if they continue to move in this direction, people are going to follow in their footsteps. They're going to see that these things can make money and have an impact, and people will go see them and consume all of this media. And, you know, things will change slowly, but they will change.
Yeah, this is almost kind of like, in terms of Apple being, you know, innovative with technology and the trends of the world tending to follow them in that world. I think that what you're saying about Disney is great, and it does help to create, you know, better scenarios for the world where we can see people as diverse and wonderful, not just horrible stereotypes and certain characteristics that are just continuously played to one T or whitewashed. And it's more like a quick reference, not to go back to that conversation, because I think we're trying to stay positive here. I do have the quote from, it's the Exodus Gods and Kings movie. And the director, Ridley Scott, had said the following about his movie. He said, "I can't mount a film on this budget where I have to rely on tax rebates in Spain and say that my lead actor is Mohammed so-and-so from such and such. I'm just not going to get it financed. So the question doesn't even come up." So that's that movie, and that's that director. Do with that as you will. And I also wanted to mention,
to say, like, that is as much his fault for saying something like that as it is the people who are financing those movies, because they are the ones that put the money in his pocket, and they have to change their attitudes as well. Because you can make money on unknown people. It's happened time and time again. You just have to find the right person for that role who is really going to bring it to life. And like, yep. You could throw, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal or Gerard Butler in these roles and like, yeah, it's going to make money. But imagine who you could discover. And like, honestly, you're going to have to pay them less too. And if they really do a great job, boom, huge profit margins. But it's that attitude, it's that closed mind attitude that keeps them from taking those risks.
It's sad. And I wish that the trends would follow more of Disney in terms of what they've done a lot in their Marvel shows, for instance. And also what I think that they're trying to do. Well, actually, you know what? Opposite. I have another thing to say actually about sort of the negative side. And I know we don't want to stay on that part for too long. I did want to mention for Donya's sake, especially, that the manga Death Note is going to be made into a live action movie, and they have whitewashed that as well. So that's interesting. But I do hope that, as you're saying, Karen, the world does start to follow what I find is I agree, a very positive trend within Disney. You know, there's something interesting too. I remember when I saw the Cinderella live action movie, I was pleasantly surprised to see, while in supporting roles, not in starring roles, there were people of color, if you remember. And that was kind of what if I'm trying to pinpoint when this might have started in Disney in terms of them, I've heard the term blind casting running around, or just including people of color in their performances, that seems to be the point where I notice, because I do kind of pay attention to Disney in particular and who they cast and when they add diversity. I do think that that was the moment that I noticed that, like, they almost tested the waters in a weird way. But I'm waiting for them to just take a role like Belle or Cinderella or, well, you know, any of these live action movies that they're creating, and then just not care about the race and then cast per singing voice or whatever.
Excuse you. Cinderella with Brandy and Whitney Houston is the only Cinderella that exists. That is the only one you need in your life, Mitchell.
That is pretty. So that's true. A really killer movie too.
That I love it. I still remember all the songs.
That was a made-for-TV movie. I'm talking like a theatrical released in theaters movie. Like, go all the way, fully budget it. Make sure that it happens on the largest scale possible, and don't make a big deal out of it. Kind of like Cursed Child, Hermione. That was just a thing. Like, you can't ever say now that you have a definitive Hermione needs to be white or black. It is whatever your imagination needs it to be, people. That was a weird, stupid debate. And I'm interested to see what happens with that, talking within our conversation of diversity, to see how they further cast Hermione in the Cursed Child performances in Broadway, for instance, or the continued performances in London. I kind of hope that they just keep her black at this point, just to say, like, we're following this standard because that's the role that was originated, and it doesn't need to be that. I don't know. That's a kind of a different subject, but that was a positive way of the world, I think, moving forward to in casting that black actress as Hermione in Cursed Child.
Yeah. Step at a time, basically.
Yeah. I will say that, like, I'm happier with the direction that Disney is moving in, particularly like A Wrinkle in Time. Like, I'm so excited for that. But then, for example, it puts into very stark relief movies like Beauty and the Beast, though, the live-action one, I feel, because it's very predominantly white. So, and I understand that that is the source material that they're taking from in terms of the original animation, but it doesn't need to be. It's a reimagination at the end of the day.
They're cartoon clocks in, like, I think Audra McDonald, I believe her name is, she's the only person of color in my mind that I can think of, and she plays the wardrobe. So that's something, I guess. They kind of tried. But that was it. And that's ridiculous that entire cast, once again, is white. I don't think that needs to be according to source material at that point. I just don't think that matters. It's just, it's so silly. We live in a world where we're begging Disney to cast an Asian actor as Mulan. I don't get why that needs to be a thing. I don't.
Like, can you, like, why do we need, that is a great point, Mitch, because it's like, you would think that's an automatic. And, like, I mean, to be fair to them, they did say, like, yes, this is something that we are looking for, but
the
fact that we're worried about it.
Yeah, it's because of the treatment.
We shouldn't be worrying
script.
About
like,
a movie.
The original script that they purchased in order to start moving forward with the adaptation was that there was a white male lead who would be the love interest over Li Shang. And I'm like, they're going, excuse you, what? No.
It's China, okay? It's like a Chinese heritage story. Done. You do not need to whitewash this. Stay away from that, Disney. I'm telling you. Stay away. Yeah. You do not want our pitchforks.
Well, speaking of pitchforks, this is supposed to be our hype section, so... But, you know, just to round out my point, like, yes, there are a lot of issues still. However, things are slowly getting better, and I am looking forward to that. So hopefully in 2017, that is a trend that continues, and we will be surprised in a good way by casting of various movies, Disney and otherwise. But Mitch...
We could say that Rogue One, I feel, did a decent job in terms of diversity, and that's where I hope Disney continues to move this trend, because as that ties back into our conversation about Donya and I caring for Rogue One, I think that was another good point of that movie. So that's all I really had to say about that.
Yeah. Mitch, your hype for 2016 is one that I think will resonate with a lot of people.
Yay. I love Gilmore Girls, as you all might know. And there was a resurgence of Gilmore Girls hype and love this past year. Now, I will say that the revival was absolute shit, but that didn't stop the whole world from stopping listening to Lorelai's voice all over again. And she is a beautiful woman. She knows my soul. She really does. That character is me. So I loved getting into Gilmore Guys, the podcast. That's the biggest plug I could ever give in this podcast. Because if you like Gilmore Girls and you like going minute by minute in that show, it's even worse than Star Wars at times, honestly. But and it's amazing. It's great that that kind of started the revival talks, too, because a lot of the actors would go on that show and then they would talk about their behind-the-scenes stuff on Gilmore Girls. And a lot of my friends started watching it on Netflix for the first time. And I've had a lot of great conversations about what it's like to be a human in this world in today's day and age, trying to create a business or be a journalist or do any of the things that Lorelai and Rory are trying to do. And I've found Gilmore Girls to come at an amazing time in my life. It's helped me heal. It's helped me become a better person. It's helped me understand that independence can be a good thing if that's what you're searching for. And I can't recommend it enough, the original series. I just don't want anyone to go in now with my recommendation of the series expecting a good revival, because they did these four 60-minute episodes that were exclusively for Netflix, and I won't go into that because that's more gripey to say how much I didn't like those. But I do appreciate the general hype over the series and the appreciation people have for having two female leads, or even arguably three, with Emily the grandmother included. And then that they're often very successful and that they're working hard at their lives. And while they do have boy drama and troubles, it's still important that their business always seems to be at the forefront. It always seems to be the most important thing that these women are succeeding, and they're doing so because they wanted to, not because someone else told them they had to. I love the storytelling of the Gilmore Girls arcs. It's a great show if you want to feel empowered. I'll give you that much, guys.
I weirdly have no interest in Gilmore Girls.
Oh my God.
I used to watch it when I was younger. Like, I've definitely seen some episodes, and I know that if I were to watch it, I would love it. Like, there's no question about it, because the things that they talk about in the episodes are very relatable, but it's not my usual cup of coffee instead of cup of tea. They drink a lot of coffee.
I understood that reference.
Someone said that. Someone just said, like, cup of coffee to me here, and I said, that's a very Northwest thing to say, isn't it? And they were just like, I guess. I just think people don't realize that. I think that's a phrase in Seattle, actually. Not my cup of coffee.
Interesting. But the shows that I tend to be into these days are genre shows. And so Gilmore Girls just, you know, I recognize the original series as being very good. I have a lot of friends. Brittany, like, huge Gilmore Girls fan. And I love her love of the show. And I was excited for the revival for my friends who enjoy Gilmore Girls, but it's just like, maybe it's a thing I'll watch eventually, but honestly, like 0% interest in watching it.
The way I described Gilmore Girls to Natalie when she was like, "What is this show? Should I watch it for Jared?" I was like, "It's a show about nothing until it absolutely rips out your heart, stomps on it, and tells you you're a bad human being for feeling." It's so rough. It gets to the point where you're like, "Oh, I hate being alive. It's so miserable, but I love the show so much." It's weird. The show,
Slice.
it's I swear it's about nothing. Like, it has no plot for about like half of its entire series, but it somehow works in these really minute plot points, and then you start to see things build that you never thought would have mattered. These characters start to matter so much to your heart, to the point where you're crying along with their successes or their failures, and you're so invested in these people, probably because so much of nothing had happened, and that nothing starts to build like this very casual relationship with the show. Your guard's down on it, and then you're just like punched in the gut with a big emotional thing, and you're like, ah. I've never
Yes.
experienced a show with just a, with such a lax way of character building. Not even like we're often saying on Rewatchable how Buffy felt like, you know, very cocky for Joss to go in and knowing he could slowly develop these characters. Gilmore Girls feels even more extreme than that in the terms of how in terms of how long it takes to develop certain characters, and I love it for that.
Gilmore Girls is a character-driven show versus a plot-driven show, which is another reason why I have no interest in it. Because I prefer, even reading books, I prefer plot-driven novels versus character-driven novels.
See, now I like slice of life stuff. Like, I really do enjoy it. But for some reason, there's something about Gilmore Girls that I've never connected with in that it's ever got me wanting to watch it. And especially with the hype, and I understand that it's a thing for a lot of people, but I never got it. I never understood it. And even when people were like telling me bits about it, I just kind of was like, I like slice of life stuff, but I don't think it's for me. And even now, I still don't think it's for me, even though it does in certain ways hit like these sort of notes of things that I really do love. But I'm so glad that you love it, Mitch, and that it makes you happy.
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's made my heart sing this year to see the world care about Lorelai, Rory, and Emily all over again. Because my Gilmore Girls are beautiful women, and they know how to get to my soul. Oh, I can't recommend it enough for anyone going through like a breakup or a like a job that you just lost or like a family member that just passed. Because all of those things will be covered in depth in the show, to the point where you will feel like you've talked to your best friend about those things and you've been able to work them out. And I think that it works as a pretty good deal for 2016 overall. If you're feeling very depressed about the way that politics or deaths or the world went, you may just find relief in having a show that can feel very cotton candy, fluffy, but also can still get you crying in like a therapeutic, I went to a therapist way. So that's pretty cool with the show too. It definitely makes you start to feel like you had a good conversation with a good friend. And that's where I think the world could really benefit from more shows like Gilmore Girls that or more slice of life, as you're saying, Danya.
So, Danya, what is a show that really speaks to you?
Oh man, a show that really speaks to me, Voltron. This is not the first time that I've talked about Voltron on this show either, but yeah, I feel like when I look back at 2016, the show that like really swept me up the most and kind of took me by surprise, and I'm still like going in like hard for fandom-wise because I feel like it's so great, is Voltron: Legendary Defender, which for anyone who hasn't seen it is a reboot on Netflix of the 80s cartoon Voltron. And Voltron's original series was basically made up of recut and spliced footage of a Japanese animation called, I think it was like Go Beast. And so what they've done is they've taken the American splice and cut version and they've redone it, essentially. But where the original had a lot of limitations based on how it was created, this one has basically just like run with the basic premise and gone crazy. It is incredibly diverse. It has interesting characters, lots of action, sci-fi, really beautiful story moments, and it just everything about it I absolutely love, because you can also tell that everyone involved in that project also loves it as well. And the people behind it are two of the creators who worked on Avatar The Last Airbender and Korra, so for an indicator of, like, the quality of the show, you just need to look at that to know what direction it's trending in. But, like, I'm so excited. It comes back again next Friday on Netflix. It just drops.
Oh my god, so soon!
Yeah, its entire second season drops next week, and I am so excited, because I've seen the second episode already. I've been discussing and theorizing and speculating, and I had a chance to talk to the cast at New York Comic Con, and I've been to, like, Voltron parties for, like, the release of some of their first merchandise that was aimed at, like, everyone, not just guys, it was aimed at girls, and they had, like, really great merchandise, and I got immersed in it in New York Comic Con this year, and it really just gave me an appreciation of the fandom and the people behind it and how much love there is for this show. And it's like, it's not a crazy length of series. It's like 10 episodes long. It's so easy to binge watch, but my god, I am so excited for next week, because it just... I'm so mad that it took me so long to be able to find the time to sit down and watch it, because I was so busy during the summer between, like, Cursed Child and Indie PopCon and then San Diego Comic-Con, and they all kind of went one after the other and into each other. So my summer, when Voltron initially dropped, season one initially dropped, meant that I didn't get a chance to sit down and watch it until after San Diego Comic-Con. And when I did, I fell in love with the show within, like, 10 minutes. I was hooked, like, immediately. And I was like, oh my god, this is incredible what they're doing. And then I was, like, really mad at myself that I didn't find the time to fit it in, because they had so much press at San Diego Comic-Con. And I was like, I would have wanted to have gone to all of it. Like, literally all of it. But it was definitely a highlight of at least the latter point of my 2016. So, and I yeah. still love it. And I'm so excited.
I can definitely back you up on this. I don't watch a ton of animated shows, but there were two reasons why I decided to watch this. One was because Brooke was going crazy over it, and I was like, I trust her. If she likes something this much, then clearly I need to watch it. And the second reason was because Bex Taylor Klaus is in it, mm-hmm. and friggin' love her. She's so cool. And
ooh, that was so she's on Scream and iZombie. That's yes. really fun, Karen.
She's on iZombie?
She played a 2-episode arc, is the most I can say.
Cool. Yeah, she's she was also on Arrow for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think she's cool. really awesome. And so I've kind of been following her where I can. Voltron is really good. Like you said, it goes by really quickly. So it's very easy to take in. And it's just a lot of fun. So I'm excited that you told me it's coming back next week. I'm sure I would have heard anyway, but it gives me time to prepare. Maybe I'll do a rewatch. We'll see.
Yeah, but I'm I'm planning on doing a rewatch at some point. I need to try and fit it in before next Friday, because I also want to do a refresher article to be like, this is like the important stuff that you need to remember before it comes mm-hmm. back. So I'm excited to do that. I'm also excited to be putting up. I had interviews with Jeremy Sharda and Bex Taylor Klaus at New York Comic Con, where they were talking about their respective characters, Lance and Pidge. So I've got that to go up. And I've also got the other interview that I did with Joaquim Dos Santos and Lauren Montgomery, who created the show. And I've got that to go up as well. So, super excited. Oh, it's next Friday.
Have you
NCAAs
seen
are
this yet,
alternate
Mitch?
events. So what I've done so far is I've added it to my instant queue, of which I'm still working through Luke Cage right now. I just finished Daredevil season two, and I do absolutely get all of my TV recommendations from y'all lovely ladies because you guys always know the best shows to watch. So Voltron is absolutely high on my list, probably right after Luke Cage. I think I'll go right into it. Maybe when the season two is out so that I can, delve really deep and get into all bits of it, and then chat it up with Danya and be like, I did it. I
There's
watched the thing.
a season one cliffhanger for Voltron that like sucks so bad, so you might want to wait until season two is out.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, cool. And that whole like getting TV recommendations thing is going to tie into our ANA for this episode. But before then, you guys want to play Two Truths and a Lie?
Yes.
Okay.
As always.
It is once again my turn, and I decided this time I'm going to tell you guys three Christmas presents that I received this year. Two of them are true, one of them is a lie. We'll see
Ooh.
if you can guess which is which.
I like the theme.
Yeah. You guys ready for this?
Born ready.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely ready.
So, Christmas present number one. I received 7 bottles of hot sauce. Christmas present
That's a
number
lot.
two, I received a plastic candlestick that glows in the dark. Christmas
Huh?
present number three, I received a Pop Funko of Firestorm from Legends of Tomorrow. Which one is the lie?
The plastic candlestick that lights up is too specific to be made up, right, Danya?
It seems a little too specific. Weirdly, I think it's the Firestorm Funko Pop.
Yeah, I'm totally Funko because that seems like that's the obvious, that's the thing I really got thing. So that's like reverse psychology. Because the other things are like really weird and out there, so they have to be true. Because how else would you have thought I had 7 bottles of hot sauce and made that
The
up?
7 bottles of hot sauce one, I was like, no, that is such an obvious Karen present that like it has
But
that has
seven.
to be true.
But seven is
Karen
such a
really
specific
loves hot
number.
sauce,
I get that, but
so
I'm saying like the number of hot sauce
that won't
is.
last her very long at all.
Oh my God. I've had the same sriracha from like a year. Does it go bad? I don't know.
How do you?
I use like an eighth of it because I sprinkle it on top of the eggs or whatever. I like my intestines to not hate me most days.
Well, I love
Oh,
me some
see,
hot sauce as well, so.
I call it lava belly. When your stomach like burns, that's
Yes.
my favorite
Yes.
feeling.
You know, it feels good, but then you're just like, oh, I'm gonna regret this.
Oh, I never regret it. I have an iron stomach and digestive
Oh,
tract,
lucky
apparently.
for you. So yeah, we're both on the Funko. That's the fake.
Both on the Funko, huh? All
Yep.
right, well, you both are correct.
Yeah, I
We knew
thought
too, though.
Firestorm was an odd one, and I was like, is it one that she already has? And I thought back because you also use the Pop Tracker website, don't you?
Yeah,
Yeah,
which
and
I
I was
have to
like, I.
like update.
And
Yeah.
also, you're also always talking about Funkos to us. So that's a very obvious, like, low
Yeah.
baller. Like, we wouldn't just pick that now.
I feel like if you had got that Funko for Christmas, I would have seen it on Instagram or Snapchat or
Yeah, like it
something.
would have been around.
Yeah.
You would have
Well,
known that.
yes and no. You guys are right. I did not receive a Firestorm Legends of Tomorrow Pop Funko. I tried to trick you guys, but you saw through my trick, which is aggravating, but also nice because that means that you guys know me so well. I did receive 7 bottles of hot sauce for Christmas. My best friends got me a travel pack, as they usually do, and that had, I think, about 6 in there. I'm guesstimating on the
What
number,
is
but I
this?
think it was
I'm thinking of
7.
like those Axe body wash travel packs. Is that
Yeah,
what this is
right, but I
presented
get
like?
them for hot sauce,
Yeah.
and they're all different like flavors and types. And then somebody
Oh
else
yeah.
got me like a Taco Bell hot sauce thing.
Amazing.
Two
That's
years ago,
amazing.
I think I actually ended up with 11 bottles of hot sauce, and that lasted me a year. Like, I went through it in a year.
Oh,
So,
good for you.
7 bottles probably be gone in 6 months.
Uh-oh.
I did receive from my best friend's mother, a plastic candlestick that glows in the dark. I don't know why, but you know what? I'm not complaining. It's pretty cool. I can, like, walk around my pitch black apartment and pretend that I'm a ghost. So,
yeah. That Krista really appreciates that.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like, no, this is cool, but don't do that. Yeah.
That is super cute. And it lights up just enough so you can see your way, but not so you can really read. So, would you try and read a book?
No, it doesn't glow that well. It just sits on my shelf. And then when I'm trying to fall asleep, I see it. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Glows in the dark.
Is it one of those automatic timed ones? I used to have those.
No, it's glow in the dark. So like the plastic, just like you put it in the sunlight and then it glows when you turn the lights off.
So does it? It must have like only an hour of charge when the sun actually goes down. That's kind of sad.
I'm not sure. I haven't timed it.
Test this out. We need to know for scientific purposes.
Okay, and then yes, I did not receive a plastic Funko of a pop Funko. A Firestorm, but Kristen did get me Sarah Lance White Canary from Legends. So, like, I haven't put it on Instagram. I tried to trick you guys with which one it was. That failed.
Mm-mm. Not cutting it.
But, yeah, I do have my very own Sarah Lance now, because I like to collect badass lady Funkos.
Yeah, and a lot of the ones I've got, or the ones that I want, are all badass ladies. So, same. I did get a Belle Funko for Christmas. I got the one where she's in the blue dress for Christmas. A friend got me that.
I have you two to blame because now I'm starting to collect just general Disney Funkos, but like the really cute kawaii ones, and usually they're princesses, and I have like way too much for how much I move. So I'm starting, I have to take a picture. I'm starting quite the collection, and I think of you guys, and I'm like, Danya and Karen, you're doing this to me.
Guys, it's getting really bad because like I have so many now and I just want more. And then I get Collector Core every other month and I just got a Logan Funko on a motorcycle and like it's my first pop ride and I'm like, this is actually really cool. Because before I was like, I don't need any pop rides. That's too much. It's too extravagant. 40 Funkos is enough. We don't need to add pop rides to it. Well, it's pretty awesome. And they sent me a Rock Candy, too. And so now I have one of those. And I'm like, I was avoiding buying any of these because I knew if I started, I'd want more. So, yeah. Hey, first world problems.
Yeah. Serious.
Speaking of Sarah Lance, though, this is shout out to one of my best friends, Kayla. She sent us an ANA, Ask NATWP Anything question. And she loves Sarah Lance. She just finished watching Legends of Tomorrow and kind of obsessed, which is awesome. You're welcome, Kayla. I told you should watch it. She's going to be like, we wanted to watch it before. Yeah, well. You're still welcome. So she's...
I'm just thinking Maui. Like, you're welcome.
Yeah. You're start welcome. Singing the song. Okay, so her question for us is, I love binge watching and have just finished all of my shows. What are your favorite shows to binge watch on Netflix other than the ones everyone talks about? So we're not looking for... you know, the Stranger Things, the Luke Cage, like any of that stuff. Do you guys have any secret kind of smaller, lesser known shows that you like to watch?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's like a secret, but I very regularly watch the BBC version of Pride and Prejudice on Netflix, like very regularly. So
I take it that's a show, not a movie.
Yeah. The BBC Pride and Prejudice, like, TV series, which was like
I'm thinking of Keira Knightley, but I'm wrong there because that's like the movie.
Yeah, not the movie. I didn't like the movie. But...
mine's a bit of a deep cut too, but in a good way because I think people have heard of Sense8, but they may have not tried it out before. That
she
show
has watched it. Yeah.
Oh God, I need another. I was gonna say Jessica Jones, but she's like, I don't want Luke Cage, so I'm like. I mean, I've already said Gilmore Girls. I think you've seen all the good ones. That's tough. Maybe try out something like, if you really want to get so super lost in a show and feel like you're never going to get out of it, start Grey's Anatomy, because that show is so long.
You know what? There was actually a series that they put on Netflix that was it's marketed as a Netflix original, but I don't know that it is a Netflix original. I think it was purchased from a Japanese production company, and it's called Good Morning Call. And it was actually really good. I watched it on a whim because I was like, I'd run out of things to watch, and there were no Netflix originals, and it was in the middle of it. Like, it was releasing episodes every week in conjunction with its release in Japan, and I started watching it, and I got really, really, really into it, and it was super cute and a little ridiculous. So, yeah.
You know, Kayla, maybe I've just convinced you to watch Gilmore Girls before I even knew this was your question. So there, I've already answered at length
She's seen
before.
Gilmore Girls. She watches Grey's Anatomy. You're
She
just.
watched good. She seemed too
Yeah.
much. I
I
don't
will
know.
say, she's a little bit hard to pick shows for sometimes because we don't always have the same taste. But I will say, like, coming out on Netflix, like the OA just came out on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet, but I've been hearing very good things about it. A Series of Unfortunate Events comes out this coming Friday. I'm not entirely sure tomorrow. It's coming out tomorrow. I don't know when this episode will go live, but by the time you guys listen to this, it will be out. And I know she's already looking forward to seeing that. And then, of course, like Voltron. She's not huge into animation, but Voltron is obviously another one. And you know what? There are a lot of shows coming out and movies that are Netflix originals that have huge stars in them now. I just watched the trailer for iBoy, which has Maisie Williams from
I can't wait.
Game of Thrones. That looks, I don't know about the quality of it yet, but I do trust Netflix.
It's for Maisie. That's why
Frontier.
I'm all excited. I'm like,
Frontier
yes.
with Jason Momoa television series. It's in conjunction with a Canadian like studio, so it's already been out in Canada, but it's getting its Netflix premiere soon. I mean, Jason Momoa, like, do I
Yeah,
need
I
to
know,
say
right?
anything else? And he's all rugged with the hair and the weapons and the violence. Like, yes. Yes, please.
You know, something I just thought of is that I know that at least the OC is for free on the OC's or the CW Seed website, as far as I remember. And I'm sure there are many other shows on there. So you might be able to dredge up some other ones, Kayla, on there that you
Constantine.
haven't fully watched.
Just throwing that out there. Constantine is also free on
It
CW
is
Seed.
also on there, and
So
that
check
they
out
have.
CW Seed. You might be surprised by the shows you find on there. But the OC is pretty decent for what it is in terms of like teen dramas from the WB era.
And
Yeah.
also seconding Karen's Constantine comment because they've just announced that the CW Seed is going to be doing an animated series of Constantine. So catching up
They did.
now on CW Seed would be good because then you'll be ready
Yeah.
for the little animated series as well. Because, oh my God, yes! He
So excited.
lives! He
So many
lives!
happy things this year already, see?
Yeah. Hopefully 2017 continues to get better. The last recommendation I will make for anybody, but for Kayla in particular, because you might actually like this, I don't think you've seen this yet. The Shannara Chronicles, season
Yes.
1 is on Netflix. Go watch it. It is an MTV series, but guys, this is like the most legit they've ever had. Like, this show does not look like it belongs on TV, let alone on something like MTV.
It was
So,
so good.
fantasy
Doesn't it take
series.
place in a post-apocalyptic Seattle?
Yeah, like it's sort of a super futuristic, but also like they've gone backwards kind of thing. Like it's all swords and bows and arrows and stuff like that, which is the kind of dystopian that I really like. And features badass elf ladies and a bisexual human kick-ass nomad lady person.
Does she date the elf ladies?
I mean,
There's
she gets what she
some.
wants.
Yeah, she does get what she wants.
That is pretty fun. I think I'm into it now.
So definitely check out Shannara Chronicles. Season 2 should be coming out this year. We don't know much yet. They did start filming though. Brooke and I are just like salivating at the idea that the show is finally coming back, but who
Excuse
knows
me?
when.
Karen, can
Anyway.
we recommend Scream? Is that something?
No. Guys, I love Scream. I do.
I
Kayla
should
would not
love
like
it.
Scream, but
There's no
it takes a
reason to like
particular
it.
audience.
It's just, it's not even scary.
No, it not it really
It's
isn't
kind of
that
just
scary.
camp for the sake of camp, I guess. So if you're into like old Friday the 13th movies, you might like this. Maybe, but I don't know. That's even scarier than this. This is just kind of dumb. It's
Yeah.
worth it for Bex Taylor Claus, if I had to say anything.
Yes. But stick with Shannara Chronicles. I think you'll be good there. Okay. This was a much longer episode than I anticipated, but we haven't been here in a while, and the three of us do end up getting kind of chatty. So I
There's a
hope you
part
guys,
two.
huh?
There's a part two to this. Not us,
Yes.
but like the next group.
Yeah, with other
So
people.
continue listening if this is the same episode, I think.
Or hopefully, maybe we're wrapping it up for you guys. I'm not sure. But I hope you
Yeah.
had fun. Hope
Maybe
you
we're the
liked all our
last.
recommendations. Please let us know your thoughts on everything that we talked about and what you liked and didn't like about 2016. And you know what? What you're looking forward to for 2017. And if you would like to ask us a question to answer on air, send an ask on notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, or you can hit us up at NATW Podcast on Twitter or Facebook. And please, 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 if you can, give us 5 stars on iTunes or rate us at all on on iTunes. Like, you don't even have to give us 5 stars if you don't feel we deserve 5 stars, but it really helps the podcast to look legitimate and to, spread us around so other people can find us as well. So please do that if you can. Kayla, talking to you. You better go on iTunes.
We
Rate us
answered
five
your
stars.
question.
Make Deidre do it too. She's listening too. Deidre, I know where you guys live. Okay, that was it. Okay, and I don't remember how we end this podcast. We do it different on every single podcast. So you know what? See you guys next time.
Yeah. Bye.
That's it.
Bye.
Bye.